This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Have you ever misgendered someone? Had a whole conversation where you thought, oh, he was nice. And then maybe you say that out loud. And then you get that sinking feeling. This happened to me a few weeks back with a guest on this show, Farhad Manju. The last time you were on, I remember I went to your Twitter bio to like maybe retweet something you had said. And I looked at your Twitter bio and I thought, oh, no.
Yeah.
Right at the top of Farhad's Twitter bio was a simple note. They/them. And I sent it to my producer and I was just like, did we mess up here?
And basically, I guess you could say you kind of messed up because you just didn't ask.
So I messaged Farhad. I said, hey, I think we misgendered you here. I'm so sorry. And even as I wrote this, I was like, did I miss a memo here? Farhad's a columnist for The New York Times, probably the first one to go by they, them pronouns. I should have known about this. It turns out Farhad had a plan. Last week in a column titled Call Me They, Farhad officially unveiled their new pronouns and asked everyone else to consider going gender neutral, too. And that started some conversations.
There were sort of two reactions. One, some people wondering if I was coming out or just what I was doing. And then two, whether I was being in some way faddish about it or just trying to be cool. That was the kind of the conversation that I had with the few people who responded.
Unlike a lot of people going by they or them, Farhad's decision isn't about feeling more comfortable in their own skin. It's about this bigger point. Farhad's sick of the sorting and the pink versus blue binary. Sick of it for themselves, sick of it for their kids.
For me, like, I feel like the world is just too gendered in some key and like harmful ways. And I, as a person who has like a platform to say something about that, and just as a person in the world who wants to live differently, I felt like I had the opportunity to do something small about that.
And by the way, Farhad knows you might be rolling your eyes right now.
You know, I am a cisgender person, and I didn't think about this a lot until very recently. And I feel like people who sort of don't have a need for what we think of as special pronouns should be sort of especially or just more cognizant of this issue. I feel very vulnerable at this moment because it's not clear that I like made the point in a way that obeyed all the sensitivities, but like that's the joy of being a columnist. So.
So today on the show, we're going to ask this question. Why not they? Would a gender neutral world be better? What would it even look like? I'm Mary Harris. You are listening to What Next. Stay with us.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
This decision Farhad made, to go from being called he and him to being called they and them. It grew out of conversations with friends and colleagues. Some of these friends were trans or non-binary. Some of these people were just noticing something new going on. Like, Farhad has a friend who's a college English professor, and she noticed that her students were super comfortable announcing their preferred pronouns, like it was no big deal at all.
You know, many of her students specify their pronouns as it's a routine thing among her students, but that she, as an English professor, still finds it difficult grammatically to refer to a single person, a specific person, using the singular they.
Just because it grates.
Yeah, great. I mean, this was the main criticism of my proposal, of the just my column, that it sounds odd to people.
So Farhad did it. He made the switch. Said, call me them, not him. They, not he. How far did you take it? Like, you're married, you have kids. Does your wife call you they? Do you introduce yourself as they?
One of the reasons this is kind of difficult and doesn't come up is I noticed you don't really have a need to specify your pronouns to other people if you're a cisgender person, a man or a woman. People just assume, and because the assumption, like, works, I don't really have to say it. And so it's difficult to say in a conversation when you're meeting someone. Usually, actually, when you're talking to a person, the third person pronoun doesn't come up. So, like, my wife would have no reason to call me they to me. And I don't think she does to other people. So the answer to your question is, like, so far, not very far, because it doesn't, like, the fundamental part of this is that it doesn't come up often. Like, it's not a conversation people are having. You know, and a couple people responded in comments to my article, some of the handful of positive comments. Someone said that she, a woman who goes by she, wanted to introduce herself as using the they pronoun sort of in a meeting or something. And she kind of chickened out. And, you know, as a person who, like, has some mild social anxiety about those kinds of situations, I feel like I also have chickened out about saying that because it introduces all these questions about, like, well, are you trans? Are you coming out in some way? It's hard to be accepting of new pronouns while also kind of being private, which I think is the, like, tension here.
It's interesting. In your column, you mentioned your kids. How old are they?
They are 8 and 6.
Yeah. I was super empathetic to that part. You said that it wasn't really until you had kids and realized just how impacted they were by gender that you started thinking about, you know, how gender informs every aspect of our lives. And I was empathetic to it because I have a couple kids and I have a daughter who's in preschool. And for about 6 months, she wore a tie to school every day. And it was this real statement. She was sometimes using the pronoun he. And at some point, she asked me to call her president, you know, as a 4 or 5 year old might. And so I kind of took the moment and said, like, well, you know, presidents can be anyone, you know, girls can be president and presidents can wear whatever they want. And she just gave me this glare. And I realized that at 4, she'd already learned this was the outfit of power. Like, this, if I want to be the person in charge, this is what I have to wear. And by the way, that means I'm a boy.
Yeah. I have gone through, you know, those kinds of experiences with my kids so many times. I think it's just a natural occurrence of being a parent is you notice them either fighting against or adopting gender constructs, and they specify sort of because they're gendered. Like, my kids went through a phase where we would choose kind of music to listen to, and, like, my son was sort of insistent that he would not listen to any music. This was, like, a few years ago, he was 6 or 7, any music that was by a woman. Like, that was, by definition, if you heard a woman singer, that was, like, a girl song. And then because he was saying that, my daughter, who's younger, kind of said the opposite, you know, was adamant to not listen to any music by a boy singer. And there have been so many instances like that in clothes, in, like, all kinds of preferences. And then the other thing is, like, they have friends, like your daughter, perhaps, who come to school in, you know, non-traditional clothing, and, like, girls who were some kind of boys' fashion or other, or the opposite. And like, I often thought about those kids that, you know, my kids seem to have such strong, defined notions of gender and what those notions did to the kids around them who may, you know, be brushing up against those notions. It just felt sad on all sides. Like, in my own life, I feel like I have often noticed preferences that I have, like fashion or entertainment or just like the ways of living that people may question, like on gender grounds. And it's just like rankles. It's weird that like I have bought sunglasses before that then people say, oh, those are women's sunglasses. And I'm like, I actually like them. And like, it's just weird that that happens, that we have this notion that there are things like women's sunglasses and men's sunglasses. And like, we're all okay with that. And we all sort of acquiesce to these, or many of us acquiesce to these just rules.
You know, you mentioned how while you were trying out this idea of going by they, them, that you reached out to folks in the trans community and folks who were gender fluid. And I was glad to hear you did that, because I do think there is this idea that perhaps what you did could be seen as insulting, appropriating someone else's identity. The thing that I really saw when I was looking at your article was the fact that the reasons you did this, I wonder if you see this, they seem different than the reasons why many people choose to go by they, them. It seems to me like a lot of people who go by they, them, they are responding to something internal, like inside of them. They don't feel like they fit in this binary. Whereas what you were doing seemed more an action taken to make change in the wider world. I wonder if you see it that way, and I wonder how people inside the community of gender fluid people responded when you went to them and said, I'm doing this.
I do think that's a fairly accurate summary of the sort of the differences. You're right. Like, for me, it is not on a day-to-day basis creating hardship to be called by a gendered pronoun in the way that it would for a non-binary person. But I think that if it's the case that most people are okay being called by a gender pronoun, or even prefer being called by a gendered pronoun, because language is sort of consensus-based, I think we need those people, like the people who, you know, fit the binary, to have this conversation and to accept other people being called they, but also just accept being called they, them, themselves.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talked in your article about how it's not just that you want other people to call you they, but that you wanted to call other people they as well. I wonder if you found yourself policing your own language in the last couple of months as you try to sort of neutralize everyone's gender.
Yeah, I mean, I was careful to specify that I don't think we should use they as a replacement for people's gendered pronouns, especially if they, you know, strongly prefer their gendered pronouns, which would be the case if they have transitioned from one pronoun to the other. It might clearly be seen as like erasure if somebody transitioned from he to her, and then I'm saying, actually, let's call you they. That is obviously wrong, and you shouldn't do that. But I do think, just sort of empirically, like from what I can tell, most people who are trans, who have transitioned from one gender pronoun to another, seem to offer and be okay with they, them. And also they, them is, from what I can tell, widely accepted by non-binary people. You know, it is the closest thing we have to kind of a universal pronoun.
A lot of the pushback to your argument has come from grammarians or yep. people who think you're being faddish. And a lot of them are not on the younger side, I'll say. So I'm curious, as you did this, the older people in your life, your parents, your editors, whoever, how did you communicate this with them?
I don't know if it's a generational thing. It probably is a generational thing. The thing I noticed more was just the people who are sort of literary, more likely to have fixed ideas about grammar and how people should speak, felt strongly about this.
Yeah, constitutional scholar Larry Tribe tweeted out your article and said, "I just don't like this," basically.
Right, right. I mean, I get that. Like, I mean, for me, as someone who just doesn't like a lot of those arbitrary grammar rules, also, that's another benefit of this, to just get those people mad. Like, I just don't.
You just like making people mad.
I don't see any basis to that argument. I don't think it's confusing in speech. I think it just sounds odd and unusual to people, but that once they get used to it, it will be okay.
Well, here's my question after reading your column. Where does a gender neutral pronoun begin and where does it end? Because we live in a world of gender reveal parties. And when you're pregnant, it's like the first or second question you're asked. It's like, when are you due? And is it a boy or a girl? Gender is everywhere. Like, if changing a pronoun is part of changing society, like, how does this work? When a kid is born, do they all just get X on their birth certificate? What happens?
Well, with pronouns specifically, I mean, I feel like you could call them, call them they. Like, babies have no cause to be upset about that. Why do we need gender on your birth certificate? Like, why is that a thing? One of the things that I think that I'm trying to get across or trying to change in the world is, like, this is just too big a part of the conversation, and, like, we could sidestep it. There's no law that says, like, we have to think about gender, like, notice it and give it such prominence on our documents and in our, you know, daily life as much as we do now. Like, maybe someone can tell me the reason why you need gender on your birth certificate, but, like, I feel like it would be fine to just not have that line.
Yeah, I just feel like humans are natural sorters. And, like, when you're a baby, it's one of the few things we know about you. Like,
we don't know that about you. I mean, the story of the moment is that we don't know the kind of gender that you really feel will become, the way that you will, like, actualize. And we shouldn't assume. And, like, it causes harm to people if we assume. And we would be better off if we didn't fixate on those questions.
Yeah. And I mean, there is something else, which is, you know, gender is this thing which we've decided we can be fluid about now. But there are, like, all sorts of other things that hold us back culturally that we can't change. Like, you can't change your race. You can't change your financial situation easily. And those are all other things that sort of intervene and change how we're seen in the world. And I guess I just wonder if it's a better play to try to really be aware of the biases we have against people in these different categories and fight them, or do this more linguistic change? Is going by they or them for the particular reason that you're doing it? Is it sort of like I don't see color, which might be a well-intentioned idea of a way of looking at race, but many people think it's sort of wrong-headed?
Well, no, because I think that the key difference is that you can, and we need space for in this world, to be able to explore boundaries beyond the kind of binary gender. And I think in that way, it's substantively different from the race conversation. And we're disassociating, you know, gender from sex. And people can be recognized now in ways that they feel, you know, better represent them. And, like, that's the difference. Like, we can have that conversation because of that difference, where I don't think it's possible with race.
Yeah, it's interesting. You said how the hard thing about doing this was that you can't really control, like, when your wife is out in the world, how she refers to you because you're not there. And, you know, do you step in? And to your knowledge, she wasn't correcting people. And it made me wonder, does this work if we're not doing that, if we're not correcting people and saying, you know what, actually, my husband prefers they, them?
No, it doesn't work if we're not correcting people. I mean, I hope to make it a real thing in life. And I feel like other people should. Like, I think it's perfectly valid to question, like, the overall point or efficacy of this just for me. Like, it's not going to change a lot in the world if just I do this. And I think that the only way to make even a small change with this kind of action is for other people to do it and to, like, mention it and to be real about it in the world.
Farhad, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Farhad Manju is an op-ed columnist for The New York Times. All right, that's the show. What Next is hosted by me, Mary Harris, and produced by Mary Wilson, Jason DeLeon, and Ethan Brooks. This week and every week, we get huge help from Allison Benedict. Thanks to her, too. You can tell me what you think of the show on Twitter. I'm at Mary's Desk. But before you do that, you should really head over to The Gist. That's Mike Pesca's show. It comes out 5 days a week, just like we do. And if you check out his feed right now, you'll find an interview with the fantastic New York Times Magazine writer Emily Bazelon. She's talking about her new book and her new podcast. Both of them are called Charged. Anyway, go check it out. It's at The Gist. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.